So, welcome to season two of Chimpions UK.
Hello.
Hey.
Yeah, so you've not been practicing your enthusiasm over the little break.
Yeah. That was it.
It's as enthusiastic as I get.
That is very, very true. Because we've had quite a long break, haven't we? Of revisiting what Jim and Fathak are like. Do you want to go first, Jim?
Well, Jim looks like an alien. And set up by his somebody else in the college. I don't know where I'm going with this. a rival, that's it. Who, do I know that my missus is seeing him?
No, you don't, no.
Oh, yeah, that was like a dream thing that you did. Anyway. So, and at the moment, I'm going down a realization of what my powers can be, and it's all to do with my mind. So, quite well with Fathak. He's the muscle, and I'm the brain.
And I'm right in remembering that Jim sort of looks like your traditional sort of grey.
Definitely like the alien in Paul.
And behaves much like him as well.
Yeah.
And Fathak?
So, Fathak is a Southern Irish, hipsterish looking bloke in his mid-40s, covered in blue tattoos. He's in England on the run from some criminal gangs that he owes money to, and he's ended up working for MI7 with his brawn powers.
And if I remember rightly, you both have rather unhealthy associations with gambling, don't you?
Yes
I'm
surprised we haven't been that way yet.
So we left you two as our MI7 operatives sort of licking your wounds a little bit at Hopton Caravan Port, which is just sort of south of Great Yarmouth. You'd hold up there.
Been sort of rescued.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I rescued you. Carried you out.
Ah, well, I've just listened back to the last episode and you did fill him in on what had gone off. So yeah, you'd hold up there after a sort of a trail of dirty money had led you to a confrontation of a hidden Thulian base. For anyone who might be jumping in at season two, the Thulians are space Nazis, for want of a better word. Go back and listen to the rest. It's initially, when you sort of, I was going to say penetrated, that's not the right, infiltrated the base. things went really well. You were fairly cautious and you dealt with any opposition with frightening ease, really. But unfortunately, when you sort of found the control centre, things took a bit of a turn for the worst. A couple of the guards got lucky shots off on Fathak and managed to take him down. And as that was going on, if I remember rightly, Jim stood back to see what was going to happen, so they zapped him again. But luckily, unbeknownst to you, you've been being shadowed by, by another metahuman. You don't really know who they are. You got little hints of maybe what their intentions were, and she was able to cause a distraction by bathing the area in darkness. Fathak, you were unconscious at this point. And so, Jim, you got out yourself. You're not quite sure how she got Fathak out. But something about what she did obviously spooked the Thulian commander, because he triggered some sort of self-destruct in the base. And Jim got to watch it implode quite unspectacularly, really. Which foiled your plans for a bit of a pickup at the end, hoping that emergency service would turn up.
Curse them.
So I think probably I'd go and join Jim and Fathak again. He's just sort of turning off the coastal road onto the track that leads back into the destroyed base. If you remember, it was set back against the coast. The driver, or your driver, because you're being driven, has already informed you that once the disturbance of the base imploding had been reported to the emergency services, MI7 had been ready to move in. You know, probably because of their, you know, sort of black ops type nature, they were waiting for an official alert rather than someone being able to tie it to them. And as you turn down that road, if you remember, there's a dirt track. There was a sort of a bit of a makeshift gate at the end, which had gone. But as you turn down that dirt track, you can see sort of swarming over the whole area are quite a few what are obviously military personnel, presumably from the military base that you've been investigating originally. But dotted amongst them a fairly healthy amount of black-suited individuals, and sat in the middle of the dirt track, presumably waiting for you, is an imposing black helicopter, blade sort of, you know, turning, idling, waiting to go. And yeah, you assume it's the transport that Captain Bird had said he'd arranged for you as you pull up.
Right.
For that car, I would imagine you're still feeling... You would still be feeling a bit battered and bruised because you were...
Yeah.
You went down a long way, didn't you?
Yeah, and my recovery's not that great. Oh, yes. Licking my wounds.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, well, we'll go back to the transport. Did you say it was a helicopter?
It is a helicopter, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Your very standard sort of black helicopter, you know. You know the type. No visible weapons.
See, we radioed in, didn't we, for them to come and pick up the suits.
Yeah.
But I imagine they've all imploded now.
Yeah, if you remember, some of the Thulians did manage to actually get suited up, but they didn't quite make it out of the base before it went bang.
Mm.
Helicopter. Mm. We're off back.
Black Hawk.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, you you know, you're greeted onto the helicopter. And, yeah, they fly you directly back to London. Off to the MI7 headquarters, wherever they are. We can't tell.
You're blindfolded.
No, you don't. You know where they are.
Been there.
Yeah, yeah. I imagine there's a little wing of the MI5 building that houses them.
You've just told everybody now.
I have, yes, yeah. But there's nothing more sinister than the MI5 building, is there? So yeah, you arrive, you go through the process, you know, you're quite used to, you know, the process of being debriefed and everything. The debriefing is pretty intense, maybe a bit more than normal, but still, again, you know, it's not unusual. You know, what you've been through is quite an unusual set of circumstances. Sorry, I was trying to not use the word unusual twice in quick succession. So you would expect that. So rather than going through days and days of debriefing, I thought probably we'd just do like a little, try and cram it all into, you know, just one little session.
Fair enough.
So yeah, during the debriefing takes about 3 or 4 days. They are very thorough, very intense, going over the same things again and again. Primarily seeing the same people, but occasionally different faces or whatever appearing, you know, as with different areas of expertise asking questions. But the main group is your own captain, which is Captain Bird, who's sort of middle-aged, fairly nondescript guy. You think probably when he was in the field, he was probably quite good. He's not just one of those people that you just don't notice. A woman called Serge McVeigh, who's sort of a rail-thin 50-something woman, severe features and a similar sort of demeanour. And someone, so both of those are you familiar with to some extent or another. And also sort of a new figure called Captain Silverson. So obviously the same rank as your commander. Sort of middle-aged, well-dressed man, short cropped hair, you know, looks ex-military. And he's got sort of like some sort of burn scar on the side of his, you know, his head, which probably explains why he keeps his hair cropped short or shaved. And yeah, they ask you to recount all the events. I'm not going to make you do that now. But the things they do want to know in particular are the Thulians themselves. They Did you notice anything about them? Did you get any idea of their society? This is obviously probably a military base, but, you know, did they...
Society? I mean, they had an obvious hierarchy, you know, in command, much as we would. You know, they were cultivating plants for their use, which we think might be used to juice them up and give them powers. But their society couldn't really glean much from the...
They also had their own gymnasium. Which, very odd. Thought sort of electromagnetic fields operated them.
Mm.
They were obviously keeping fit. You know, it was like a military operation. So... Yeah, you keep on your toes, don't you?
But no real idea of the sort of their social structure. Or obviously, it'd be good to get some sort of look into their mindset. You know, how they, I suppose, I presume they're soldiers. So,
yeah, if you walked into the middle of a military military base here and looked up and down the grunts, you wouldn't get an idea of how normal social etiquette. Pans out, would you?
No. So, Jim, you said about the gymnasium, but what else did you manage to glean about their technology? Obviously, I'm sure you're aware from briefings that they seem to try and destroy technology behind themselves, not leave anything for us to.
Well, I did get a lot of photographs, so I think. Into their language. My next step. Everything was run by a generator. They weren't using the generator. Or were they using that generator?
No, the generator was off. It was cabled up, ready to go, but it wasn't actually turned on. Yeah.
They seemed to have their own power source, which was coming out of the plant room, was it?
You never saw their power source?
No.
The plant room is where the generator was. If you remember, it was all cabled up and all the cables were leading into the plant room like it was ready to go, but obviously it wasn't turned on, but everything was still powered.
Yeah. But there was another room in the silo sort of section. A big vat of juice.
There were a few places that you didn't get to check out, yeah.
Yeah. No, we saw that. But it's all very, very strange. Do they have symbols on them? Similar?
Their language seems to be very sort of like derivative, but yeah, like a hieroglyphic type language. But it's very, the imagery is all very organic.
If you want to find out any more, you should listen to season one of the Chimpians UK podcast.
Can't remember. Fuck off.
So, nothing apart from the sort of the magnetism type stuff then. Okay. It's a shame you weren't able to glean any of their technology and bring it with you.
Well, yeah. We've got some of their batons. They're, you know, like stun batons. We've got those. We picked up a blaster as well, I think. Let me have a look at my character sheet.
Yeah, we did. So I was going to keep that.
Yeah, we've got a blaster. But everything that they'd made or had in place, like the gym equipment, it was all seemed to be like grown or moulded out of single pieces. Like a weird resin.
Mm. Obviously, they're obviously taking notes and things as you're talking.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, our tech boffins will have a look at those devices you managed to glean. And, you know, all that sort of thing you would have, you know, 3 days you would end up handing in or whatever. Photos. You can withhold stuff if you so choose. I can't imagine why you'd want to. So photos would have been uploaded and everything.
So there was one other thing.
Okay.
Obviously, we have MI7 is, you know, where some of us are metas.
Yeah, indeed.
And I have the power of visibility. But, sure, the audience couldn't see, except for the their sort of leader. He could see, he had a headset. Did he have a headset on?
Yeah, he had some sort of device, yeah.
With like with a face shield on the front or something.
Yeah.
Just glasses.
No, it was like some sort of, almost like a sort of an energy hod came down.
Yeah. So he had this thing, and he could see him. He could see me, couldn't he?
Yes,
he could. He pointed at me. Yeah. So yeah, so their technology can see ability, possibly other power.
But they may not see in the, you know, normal wavelengths that we do. Could be anything. You know, it could be using X-ray vision or something that you don't normally block out.
Yeah, I mean, Jim, you would remember that it was only him.
Know that. But I'm just trying to describe a bit more of their tech.
Yeah, well, we obviously know their technology is superior to our own. Every little bit that we can glean. So those couple of items that you've given us might at least give us some sort of insight.
Didn't we take some of the food bars?
No, I don't think so. You went in and worked out that, yeah, there was obviously boxes of sort of like dried rations, effectively.
Mm.
I don't think you took any of them.
Right.
Sorry, Jim, no.
They're obviously hiring people who are sympathetic to them.
Yes, we have got wins that they have sympathisers.
Mr. Findell's set up.
Yes, we shall be doing something about that post-haste. And there are other far-right groups that seem to sympathise.
The security company they were using to protect the base, the human sort of face to it.
Yes, we shall be looking into that as well. They're not a small organisation, so...
They also had a human down there who was a captain. I can only describe his mind as chaotic. Whether they broke him or that's the way he was. Maybe he's a powerful meta who's got a bit senile or broken down himself.
Well, I'm sure we'll dig his body out eventually. So, you've both obviously been through quite a traumatic time, and I think a couple of weeks' rest is in order. And we probably have another job lined up for you once that's over, so we need to see you recuperated. We're waiting on some intelligence being deciphered. We've had to call on other agencies to help us with that. Yes, it's linked to what you've just done. So, take a couple of weeks off. Forget about the job. Obviously, keep away from the gambling dens. We don't want you getting into any more trouble. And as soon as we're ready, we will send you word. And of course, you know, keep your exploits to yourselves. Although that doesn't really need saying, does it?
No, I think I might have a beach holiday.
A beach holiday? This sounds nice.
Yes. Right then, Falak, let's get out of here.
So, yeah, you both effectively get a couple of weeks off. I can't remember if I gave you an XP last time.
No.
Nope, definitely didn't.
So, considering the intensity of everything that went off, I think you can have 5 character points, which is quite a lot of me. But also, I don't think I've done it for a couple of sessions either. So
that's right.
6 then.
Welching out on us.
So, yeah, you can actually buy something with 5 character points.
Or 6.
Or 6, yeah.
Tell you how much I need in a minute.
And yeah, you get a couple of weeks R&R. Is there anything either of you would like to do particularly?
Yeah, as soon as we get out of the MI7, we're gambling. Because we've got some money that we picked up.
I know. You know, I should really send it back to the family.
But just think, if we get some more...
Yeah, I know.
You could send some more back.
I tell you what, let's be sensible about it. Let's get the money we've got... Put 3/4 of it in our pockets and save a quarter, and then we'll gamble the 3/4.
Okay.
Okay.
Here's your 100.
Was that all?
I can't remember how much we took off him. It was quite a bit.
5 grand.
Yeah.
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 Well, £5,990.
Because he'd bought some super kestrel and some pasties or something.
Yeah. So what's how much are you spending of that?
All of it.
So let's say 2,000 each on gambling. Yeah. And the rest we'll keep as a contingency to gamble later.
And what is your game of choice?
I've got it in my character sheet.
Got card games, dice games, sports betting.
Sports betting.
Right, yeah. So,
yeah, horses and boxing and things like that.
Yeah, no, it's just such a general. Yeah.
Well, it's there, isn't it?
So, I've got my gambling is bridge, poker, general card games.
I like bridge. That's a nice classy touch.
Bridge?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fucking hell.
I know it's not a big stake, but yeah, you can win money on bridge, can't you?
I don't know.
Have you? Which can. Anyway, anyone can win money on anything.
Yeah, well,
you can bet on fucking snails, can't you?
I suppose.
How are you at bridge? You want to make a pair?
Teach me.
During those couple of weeks, Jim, Fathak, sorry, I imagine because you have a disadvantage of being destitute, don't you?
Yeah.
Luckily, because you're employed by MI7, they will at least meet some basic needs for you. You're not going to starve to death or whatever. I would imagine that your accommodation, you're probably in some sort of grotty flat or shared house somewhere around the London area.
Yeah, East London. It's going to be one of these hotels that hires out the rooms to, you know, the council and things like that, isn't it? For people in horrible situations.
Yep, yep. What's the hotel called?
It's called the Talbot House Hotel.
Yeah, it's run down, but there are worse places to be.
It's clean but dilapidated.
Yeah. With a mixture of other residents.
Yeah.
Quite a lot being possibly Eastern European. Because this is where you live, so I want you to decide what it's like. Do you think there's a bit of a community going on there with all these people there long term?
Well, there's few people that are long term. It has a high turnover of faces, I imagine. So a community, a couple of regulars that you can get friendly with, but yeah, not many.
So yeah, and you're reasonably friendly with them, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So yeah, in your 2-week gambling frenzy, which may only last a day, who knows? yeah, you come back one evening. I mean, are you a serious gambler? You know, you don't drink while you're gambling and that sort of stuff, or are you? You know?
I am a. Oh no, I drink. I'm a chancer. That's why I'm in Stuck. If I was a serious gambler, then maybe I wouldn't be in the mess I am. I have some skill, but yeah, I don't have the luck of the Irish.
You have some skill, but then you get carried away and get drunk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. So yeah, you sort of stagger home after another evening out with Jim, who I imagine is probably quite a measured gambler.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the hotel is, you know, there's always someone around because it's just the nature of the place, you know. People are not working and things like that. You pass a few pleasantries to people, you know, you're not shit-faced, but you're a bit. And yeah, you sort of go into your salubrious room to find an envelope shoved under your door.
Ooh.
Yeah, you occasionally get the odd flyer or something. So yeah, you open it up. It just says, they're on to you. They've hired help. Watch your back. That's it.
Handwritten it or handwritten. Just printed?
No, it's handwritten.
Mm. Okay. I'll shove it in my pocket. That could be fucking the number of anyone.
Yeah, at least it's certainly initially you don't recognise the handwriting or anything.
There's hundreds of people that could be on to me now.
Well, there's a few. And then as you sort of crawl into bed and, drift off into a drunken sleep, we sort of find ourselves in a small, gloomy office. It's like steady, low, pulsing beat of music coming through the door, which gives the impression that this might be some sort of back room of some sort of, you know, public house or club, something along those lines. Room's pretty worn, but not unwelcoming. The furniture is serviceable, maybe even somewhat opulent, but really dated. Sat behind a large weather desk is a heavy-set man in his 30s. Suit's plain, a little bit too small for him, as he's, you know, to contain his quite large bulk. Hair is slicked back, and he has sort of a ruddy, weather-beaten face. On either side of the desk, pushed against the walls, are like two worn leather sofas. Sprawling on one's a large bloke, you know, much larger than the guy behind the desk, and much less fatty bulk, if you like. See, like, he sports a blonde mohawk and a tatty tuxedo, which its lapels like sort of indicate it's from a slightly different decade than you're in now. His appearance combined with the music and all that, you think he'd probably be the doorman. Sat on the opposite sofa is a wiry, wire-frayed man with a mop of unruly red hair, nondescript jeans and T-shirt. Sat beside him is a woman, similar age. She's also got this sort of mop of wild, you know, sort of mane of wild red hair, piercing blue eyes, and her features are remarkably similar to the man's. And they're all sat there in silence, just listening to the dull beat of the music. Doorman sort of, you know, just staring into space. The twins looking particularly shifty and restless. And the man behind the desk just keeps glancing at his phone. And then finally, the red-haired man clears his throat. And I'm going to take a little pause while I try and go, I'm going to try and do an Irish accent now. Probably quite badly. But I'll give it a whirl. I can always re-record it, can't I?
Yep.
So yeah, this wiry red-haired man clears his throat and says, what are we here for, boss? And the big bloke behind the desk goes, good question, Tady. We're here because we need to put this Favak issue to rest once and for all. I know we've resolved most of the damage that him skipping town on us has done, but the other crews still haven't fully let it go. And it's damaging our reputation. But boss, we tried to deal with him before, and it got us nowhere. We even tried to shoot the fella. Ah, Tady, this is why Dar put me in charge. You got to learn to think outside the box. You're right that the normal approach is getting us nowhere, so we have to try something new. So listen up, it's time to tighten our belts for a while. Fathak isn't the only freak walking the aisle, so I've hired as one of our own. They don't come cheap, but the best never do. And they're going to send a very clear message for us, because when they've finished with Fathak, no one is going to want an open casket funeral. And with that, his phone vibrates on the desk, and he looks down, then looks up and bellows across the room. Ah, get your ass in here, and let's introduce you to the family. And the office door swings open with the blaring lights of what the disco now. And stepping into the room, this is just a silhouetted shape. But as the eyes of the occupants adjust, we return to Jim.
Yeah.
So yeah, obviously you don't know that, but it's like sort of a bit of background.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be a million miles for you to realise who might be coming after you.
Yeah.
Right.
So, Jim, yeah, you have a couple of weeks as well. Again, Fathak is... I don't know if you and Fathak are often gambling partners. I imagine probably...
Yeah.
Possibly. You are, all right. Okay. I imagine you had quite a different style, so you might not be...
Yeah, I usually take most of his money.
I see.
That's why I'm destitute.
And then give it back to him as loans.
Yeah, that sort of individual, yeah.
No, not that he knows.
No, Fathak's not stupid, are you? So yeah, Jim, over these couple of weeks, you get a call from your ex-wife, who you will have to remind me her name, if asking to meet you in a cafe near the university you used to teach at, because you have things to talk about.
Really?
Well, yeah. After a short, curt conversation, that you have the children to discuss who you haven't seen for a reasonable amount of time, and. Various other, mundanities that a divorce entails. And Jay, you find yourself out of, I don't know, fucking Keith's calf. a favourite of students and university lecturers, but not the weekend, which it is.
Okay.
And Jay, you sort of push your way, and it's a lot quieter than you remember it being in the week. And you scan the calf looking for your wife, who you don't see. But you do see Professor... What's his name?
Oh, that was ages ago as well.
We'll edit that in as well. Hang on. You do see Professor...
Professor Timmy!
Bertram Foxley. So, yeah, you see Bertram Foxley. So, yeah, Bertram catches your eye across the calf. Obviously, recognises you and beckons you over. He's sat in a booth by the window.
Bertram?
Yeah. Jim, have a seat. Have a seat. Second generation German, that's why I'm not doing a bloody atrocious German accent. just roll me perception as you take a seat.
7. Oh, I made it by 5.
Yeah, so as you sort of slip into the booth, you notice that Bertram obviously has a drink. He seems to have a drink ready for you as well, and you notice there's a third drink at a place that's no one's seated at the moment. Although, it shows the signs of someone's been, drinking from that drink. Oh, Jim, I asked Barbara if we could just have a quick chat alone. I thought it was only fair to both, you and me. look, Jim, I'm going to spit it. I'm just going to spit it out. Since you and Barbara broke up, we've become a how do I say this? We've become a bit of a thing. I really don't mean to cause you any pain or anything, but you did sort of throw us together, really.
No, Bertram. I think you masterminded this from the beginning.
I'm sorry, Jim. Well, I masterminded what?
You're the one that fucking did this to me in the first place.
Did what?
Turned me into this creature.
Jim, I'm sorry, but how do you come to that conclusion?
Because I'm quite intelligent. Well, see it.
Yeah, you are, and you've always had my respect, even though I don't agree with many of your methods. But intelligence, I don't see how it leads you to think well.
Well, let's just say I've got my suspicion. Bertram.
Well, again, Jim, I don't mean to sound too blunt, but, you know, all your extracurricular activities, the students, and your dalliances with some of the substances that some of the more adventurous ones take, then it was bound to end in tears somewhere or another. I wouldn't have expected this, but...
Yeah, seem to be taking a liking to how my life was lived, and knowledgeable of it, really.
I didn't hide the fact that I didn't like your methodologies, but I neither hid the fact that I was quite...
Look, let's just cut to the chase. What do you want?
Well, I just wanted to be the one that told you that I'm moving in with Barbara.
Oh, I'm fucking so happy for you.
Oh, that's very noble of you, Jim.
Yeah, so happy. Are my kids calling you father yet?
I would never try and take the place of you as your children's father.
Past you.
It would be nice. It would be nice if you actually saw them every now and again. That what, might
looking
help
like
matters.
This. Do you think they want to see me like this?
Well, again, to be brutally frank, no. You quite frighten them. He doesn't laugh. That's me. Sorry. You do quite frighten them, but that's just I'm a chemist rather than a. But, you know, I studied all the science.
Yes, you are a chemist, aren't you?
To some degree. And, you know, there's a certain amount of desensitization. Your appearance is very unusual, but they would soon get used to that if you... Oh, here comes Barbara now.
Yeah. Save the day.
So, yes, and Barbara joins you and... Yes, they've obviously sort of somewhat manufactured that he will break the news to you and whatever. I mean, and yeah, so Barbara, I'm not going to try and do a female voice. I can't do it to save my life. Is, you know, sort of if you want to see the children, that's fine. You have every right, and I don't want to stop you. But if you're only going to see them once every few months, then I would rather you didn't see them at all. Think on that. And I know Bertie has told you what's happened. And Jim, I am truly sorry. I still love you in many ways, but dear, you can't expect to be so distant and maintain a relationship. But I want you to be part of your children's lives, but don't confuse them. Just let me know. And we wanted to do this not over the phone. That's why we're here. We owed you that.
Okay. Send me the papers and I'll sign them.
The papers for?
Divorce.
Thank you, but I'm more concerned about the children.
Well, how have taken that their father looks like E.T.?
Jim, it's... Yes, you've changed, but I can still tell it's you. Whether you're convinced of that, Paul, whether Jim's convinced that he still looks like himself, it's a different kettle of fish.
You could always put a bag over your head.
Well, with two eye holes, yeah. Proper E.T. styler.
Jim, look, I know this is a shock. Take a few weeks to think about it. I want you to see the children. They still want to see you. They are nervous of you. You need to reassure them.
Okay. I'll think about it. Send me the papers. I'll sign them. I'll be out of your hair.
Thank you.
Anything you need for the kids, money-wise? Ask.
We ain't got it.
Speak for yourself. I'm fucking loaded.
How do you know?
I'm fucking loaded. No, I will put some money on the table. I'm going to put £1,000 on the table.
Fair play.
So.
It's my £1,000.
No, it's not. It's my £1,000. I would have gambled out contingency.
Thank you, Jim. I assure you this will all go to the children. And as I say, I want us to arrange something properly so you see them properly.
Oh, we will. Well, I see them all the time.
Stalking.
Well, I'm not going to say that, but...
But it's true.
Let her think about that. Invisibly from across the road. Sometimes I sit in their classroom.
Oh, God. Anyway. Thank you, Jim, for being so civil about this. I know this is a shock. But... yes, I don't want to draw this out any longer than we have to, so as soon as you've made a decision, let me know.
I will.
Come on, Bertie.
Fucking Bertie.
Dirty Bertie.
Yeah. Fucking Bertie's got it coming, I tell you.
Do you want me to give him the fear?
Fucking chemist, he's the one that fucked with my drugs.
And they leave.
Especially that little tablet with the alien face on it. The little green one.
Does he need a visit from MI7 in an unofficial capacity?
Yes, they haven't met you yet, Valak, have they?
No, they wouldn't have met Valak, no, I don't think.
Right, no set him
to,
up.
Unless you've gone out of the way to introduce
what
them.
What shit chemical things is he making up in his workshop? What shit chemically things can I plant in the workshop?
You're meant to be the good guys.
It's fucking Bertram.
What are the great guys?
Hate and I'm convinced he's the one that did this to me.
And I've got a trait against family, and he's fucked with his family.
Yes.
So I don't mind going and giving him a bit of fear.
Where did you think we were good guys?
Well, you're grey guys, aren't you? Really? You're fighting for the greater good, but you're very...
Oh, yeah. Of...
You always play characters like that.
No, we don't.
Well, normally.
Valak has a sense of honour. He'll help and protect those in need. But...
He might take the wallet afterwards.
I have limitations about... Yeah, families and kids and bullying and that. And it's like, if he tells me that he's fucking messing with Jim's family, I'll go and give him some gentle persuasion.
A bit of a rough diamond.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. I just think we end up in gambling dens indebted to fucking criminals if you're a goody-goody.
So, yeah, you, apart from those sort of little two events, you unless there's anything particularly you want to do apart from gambling, then...
No, not really.
I'm going to... I don't know if we put an age on the kids.
I don't know that we did.
So...
30 and 29.
No. So I'm going to find out sort of like if they're on social media, got emails or anything like that.
Okay, yeah.
I'll quite possibly get in touch with them myself.
So there's William.
Yeah.
How old's William?
He's...
Okay. And then what's the other one called?
Jim.
So we've got Jim.
Junior.
Jim Junior.
God, that's the height of bloody narcissism, isn't it? Name your kid after yourself. How old's Jim?
He's 11. I can't remember how many we said. 3 or 4.
I've got a feeling it was 3.
Yeah, but then didn't we have a conversation about if I put it up another one, it would give me a load more points or something. I can't remember now.
Oh, yeah, for a disadvantage, yeah.
Anyway, I'll be fucking fucking.
So would we say all four, 3 or 4 of them are in there around their teens? I know 11 is
no. Low, but... Yeah, some would be a bit lower. So, 1 at 8. Leave it at 3.
Yeah, let's leave it. Is the other one a boy or a girl?
They're all boys.
So, yeah, you can... Yeah, they will have social media stuff and all that.
Yeah, I'll have to think about how... What am I going to say?
But you want to sort of try and make inroads with them without making your ex-wife... Well, your estranged wife aware, sort of thing. Is that the idea?
I might write a letter to...
Okay.
And then say, is it okay to get in touch with you? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't want her to think I'm, don't want that bitch to think I'm stalking them.
Well, you're the one who is turning invisible and sitting in their classroom.
No, that's a joke.
I know.
Or was it? Oh, sorry. Yeah. Fucking with the mind of the teacher.
So, yeah, you're taking a very measured, cautious approach, I suppose.
Yeah, dear children, that bitch of a mother.
Maybe we'll leave that there. You've been listening to Chimpions. Fabak was played by Scott. Jim was played by Paul. And your GM was Mark. You can follow us on Twitter, ChimpionsRPG. Find us on Facebook as Chimpions. Email us at mark@chimpions.co.uk. If you enjoyed the show, you can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And if you want to help us improve the show, you can consider leaving us a 1-off donation by finding us on GoFundMe. Or if you'd like to help us out on a more long-term basis, you could find us on Patreon as Chimpions. Thank you for listening. Hope you join us again. Bye.